Most would assume, because I grew up in the 2000s, right? I was born in 98, so I'm a 90s baby, but I grew up in the 2000s, that I would not know who this is. But I am a byproduct of my parents, who were raised in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So yes, very well aware of Little Michael and the Jackson 5. I Want You Back. It's a great song. It's a great song. After Hours here on 96.5, The Fan, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. Jacob, you played the song, so I'm under the assumption that you also know the song.
Yeah, and I'll test you on this next one, coming back after our next break.
Buddy, you have no idea what you're signing up for here. You can ask my wife. One of our favorite things to do in the car is, like, just put on a playlist, right? So we'll click, like, 90s hits or 80s hits, 70s hits, or, you know, even up to today's top hits, right? You got to cover up the little screen thing or whatever, because we both drive Ford Escapes that have, like, that little, you know, that main screen that'll tell you what the name of the song is, the artist's name, and all that. We try to cover that up, usually with, like, a napkin or something, and you just start the playlist. You put it on shuffle, and we have to try to guess the name of the song and who sings that song. I don't know if she will admit this, but I'm going to go right out and say it, and she's probably going to get upset with me. I am much better at the game than she is. I grew up, and I'm one of those people, like, I'm wired strangely in that, like, I have to know. If I listen to a song and I enjoy the song, I have to know the name of the song and who sings it. I have to. It's just like the way my brain is wired. So that way, if I hear another song and I'm like, oh, that sounds like this person, and it is, I can gravitate and try to grab other, you know, listen to other music that that person has released. And I don't know. It's just kind of the way I am. I'm the same way with, like, actors and actresses. Like, if I watch a movie that I enjoy, I have to know the names of the actors and actresses that lead that film, because it helps me evaluate if I see a trailer for a film a little bit later on down the line and I see that actor or actress in it, and I thought, oh, they were really good in this, I may want to check this out because, you know, I think that they might be a good actor or actress in that role or that genre, whatever it is. So not to get off onto a little bit of a tangent here, but we will get back to the sports here. 913-586-7965. We spent basically the entire first hour of the show tonight talking about the franchise tag for Trey Smith, the fact that it is a non-exclusive franchise tag, which means that other teams can negotiate, but the Chiefs have the final say. If a team puts in an offer sheet and the Chiefs say, nope, that's too rich for our blood, he will then sign with that team, but the Chiefs will get two first-round picks back in return as compensatory picks. That hasn't happened in 25 years. Not since the Dallas Cowboys signed Joey Galloway from the Seattle Seahawks in 2000 has that happened. And somebody earlier in the show in the text line asked what the Seahawks got back in return for that. Well, I have an answer for you. So in 2000, the Seahawks traded Joey Galloway to the Dallas Cowboys for first-round picks 2000-2001 as a part of that non-exclusive franchise tag. The Seahawks then used those picks to get Sean Alexander and Corin Robinson, both of whom played big roles for the Seattle Seahawks at points in their career. Sean Alexander, of course, is still, I mean, maybe not still, but was at one time the leading rusher in both yards and touchdowns in Seattle Seahawk history. He played 8 of his 9 years in the National Football League with Seattle, rushing for 9,429 yards and 88 touchdowns in 8 seasons. He led the NFL in rushing touchdowns twice, and in 2005, rushed for 1,800 yards and 27 TDs. That was the year Seattle got all the way to the Super Bowl. So, I think for my money, Seahawks got the better end of that deal. And then Corin Robinson, who was not, you know, maybe not the same MVP or offensive player of the year caliber talent that Sean Alexander was, had a fairly solid career in some respects. His second year in the league in 2002, he had 78 catches for 1,200 yards in 8 seasons in the National Football League, 5 of which he spent with Seattle. He had 244, or in the 5 years he was with the Seahawks, 244 catches for 3,567 yards and 14 touchdowns. So both of those guys played big roles with the Seattle Seahawks. Sean Alexander, definitely more than Corin Robinson, but I'd say the Seahawks won that deal. No question about it. But in talking about Trey Smith being put on the franchise tag, I think that it hints at a long-term extension being put in the works. And I believe that means that the Chiefs have to address the running back position. They have to. And we were talking about some options. Some had mentioned Devin Neal from KU. I had mentioned Caleb Johnson from the University of Iowa. I think he'd be an interesting fit. Somebody had also said Ollie Gordon. I was trying to think of another one that was mentioned. DJ Giddens from K-State. But somebody right towards the end of hour one threw out a name that I think, you know, may have some legs to it. He's a little bit undersized for an NFL running back, by, you know, in terms of an interior back. But the way he runs as an inside zone scheme, the Chiefs run, I think he could be a valid fit. Dylan Sampson from Tennessee, a 901 in the text line mentioned that. Talk about ability at the goal line, right? Which I think Giddens kind of struggled with. He only had 7 rushing touchdowns last year. Dylan Sampson rushed for 22 touchdowns for the Tennessee Volunteers last season. He rushed for 1,500 yards nearly on 258 carries. Definitely a short yardage and goal line monster at the college level. Does it translate to the NFL? I don't know. But again, I think that this goes to show you that this is an extremely deep running back class. We've thrown out 7 or 8 different names, and we haven't even thrown out the big ones. Nobody's thrown out Ashton Jeanty's name because he's not reachable. Nobody's really thrown out Omarion Hampton's name. Somebody just mentioned Cam Scataboo. But again, I don't see Cam Scataboo as a guy that can be an interior rusher in the NFL. I don't see it. I don't see him as a 3-down back. That's just my opinion. What about Travion Henderson? What about Quinshon Judkins? Yeah, 734 said Sampson would be a great fit. Judkins or Henderson would be a great grab. Yeah, it's nuts. This running back draft is nuts. You got to get one if you're the Chiefs. You have to. And I think you got to get one within the first 3 rounds. That's just my opinion on it. Because you got your pick of the litter in the early round, in round 2 and round 3 of this draft. In terms of positional need, I'm not sure there are many positions that are placed above running back. Interior defensive line, left tackle, corner. But you've got 3 picks in the first 3 rounds. I would go after a running back if you can. Please. Please go after a running back. But we were talking towards the end of hour one. Somebody texted in a 913. And again, our text line is 913-586-7965. Someone asked, can you talk to what left tackles we should go get this year? And this is a hard one to answer. Because in terms of the NFL draft, and, you know, every once in a while you hit, there's a guy in the later rounds that is an absolute hit, right? Jordan Mailata. I mean, look at the deal that Alaric Jackson signed with the Rams today. He was an undrafted free agent coming out of the University of Iowa, who just signed for $19 million a year. So can you find a left tackle late in the draft? Sure you can. But it's harder than finding a guy and getting a guy early on in round one. And when you look at the top of this left tackle market, Kelvin Banks, Will Campbell, even Josh Simmons to some extent, you may have to get into the top 20 for a guy of that magnitude. And I just don't think that it's entirely possible. Somebody had mentioned to me a couple of weeks ago, Wyatt Millam from West Virginia, 4-year starter, all Big 12 performer, road grader, big body dude, 6'6". He's listed at 315, but with that frame, he's got an opportunity to put on weight. He may not even need to put on weight. He's more of a high floor guy is how I would describe him, right? His ceiling is not going to wow you, right? I don't think he has the ceiling of a guy like Armand Membo from Mizzou by any means. I don't think that he has the ceiling of a Will Campbell out of LSU, but he's got a higher floor than I think Membo does. And maybe that's what you're looking for if you're the Chiefs, right? Maybe you're not looking for an all-pro, Pro Bowl caliber left tackle. Maybe you're just looking for an Eric Fisher. Maybe you're looking for, and 5 years ago, I would have said, absolutely not. We're not looking for another Eric Fisher. At this point, I wouldn't be disappointed in it. Just somebody who's reliable, man. Somebody that you're not like, oh my goodness, what an outstanding talent he is at left tackle. But just one of those dudes where you kind of just forget he's there, which is an extreme compliment for an offensive lineman, right? To forget that an offensive lineman is there means that he's not making mistakes. I don't know. That's just my thought. So Wyatt Millum is an interesting possibility. You know, I know that it's always kind of hard to... It's hard to... comes FF's guy, because they're always, you know, they can be very finicky. It's a lower level of play that they were going against in college. But Gray Zabel put up outstanding numbers as an offensive lineman at North Dakota State. And we've seen North Dakota State become a pipeline for the NFL in some respects. And he's a big enough guy, 6'5", 316. Josh Connerly is one from Oregon who is another high ceiling guy. He's a raw prospect in some respects. Donovan Jackson is one that I find increasingly intriguing. A lot of people are plugging him as a guard in this draft class, but I think he's capable of playing tackle. I really do. And I think he has a similar story to Trey Smith in a lot of respects. Trey Smith was a five-star coming out of high school, number one prospect, number one tackle in the country. Goes to Tennessee, does some good things his first couple of years, but he's dealing with injury issues and the clots and, you know, all that stuff that he had going on, and he just tumbled down people's draft boards. Jackson, I think, he was a five-star coming out of high school for a reason. The talent is there. The potential is there. I don't think he lived up to that. I don't think he reached the level he's capable of when he was at Ohio State. But you got to place faith in Andy Heck to bring that potential out of him and let him live up to the standard that he is capable of. And we haven't seen Andy Heck do that with a tackle, right? We've seen Andy Heck on the interior do remarkable things. To find, evaluate, scout, draft, and develop Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, home runs. Absolute home runs. But at left tackle, at right tackle, it hasn't happened yet. So do you want to give Andy Heck another guy, another project to say, hey, man, turn this piece of coal into a diamond? It's a tough one. It's a tough one to try to justify. An 816 in the text line just said, I'm just going to be honest with you. I think DJ Humphreys right now is our best option. At left tackle, I agree with you. I do. Wanye Morris is a swing tackle. He's a guy that you can put in spot scenarios, right? When you really need a guy. If DJ Humphreys goes down with an injury, right? Or his knee buckled, or he twisted an ankle, whatever it might be. If you need him for a week or two, that's great. But a week-in, week-out starter at left tackle, I just don't see it. Maybe at right tackle. But again, I just don't see that. Kingsley Suamataia. I think he's a guard. I think he's a guard at the NFL level. I just do. And you're not. I think that it's too rich right now in the free agent market for a left tackle, based on what Alar Jackson got today from the Rams. Ronnie Stanley's going to warrant 23, 24, 25. Yeah, $25 million, right? Which is insane money for a guy like that. Tristan Wirfs, okay. Penei Sewell to some extent, okay.
I think
Ronnie Stanley, no.
I think Wirfs is at about 28.3 a year from the contract that he signed.
To put Ronnie Stanley even in that stratosphere is crazy to me. But he might get it. He just might, right? So if he's making 25, 26, whatever it might be, Cam Robinson, 22, 23. Jedrick Wills, probably in the vein of Alaric Jackson, 17 to 19. Another 816 says they developed Andrew Wiley and he got paid when he left here. That's a good example, but he might be the only one at a tackle position. And he was around for a long time. Do you want to wait a long time? I mean, how long did it take before Andrew Wiley became a starter? 3 years? 4 years? Before he became an every week starter for the Chiefs? You can't wait that long. You wait 3 or 4 years, Mahomes is going to be 33, 34 years old. What was the point? You got to find a guy that you can believe in right now. You have to protect Mahomes right now. You can't protect Mahomes 3 or 4 years from now. We got a lot more to get to here. We're more people talking about draft, free agent, you know, whatever the Chiefs might do here. We'll continue this discussion. 913-586-7965. Logan Weber here alongside my producer for tonight, Jacob Mustard. You're listening to After Hours on The Fan. Okay. Yeah, I got it. I know the song. I couldn't tell you the name of it. But I definitely know the song. This sounds different than the actual version in terms of its instrumental.
It's slightly different.
Is it Song of Silence?
Instrumental music nowadays.
Is it Song of Silence?
Sound of Silence.
Sound of Silence. Dang it. Sound of Silence, yeah. And who sings that? What band sings that?
That was the original one by Simon and Garfunkel.
Okay. And then there's, of course, like the heavy metal one that came out, you know.
By Disturbed, yeah. I figured that would be too recent. I had to go all the way back to 1965 for you.
Yeah, man. That's a throwback. That's a good one. Sound of Silence. The heavy metal version is like, if you have a dad that's middle-aged, like a dad in their 40s or 50s, that's obviously in their playlist somewhere. The number of times that I sat like on a job site with my brother and father-in-law working on, because we do, at least they still do. I no longer do, but I might. Every once in a while, I'll sit in with them, but we do guttering and siding work on a side business sort of thing. And that song typically came on at least once a day via the portable speaker. So that's a middle-aged dad classic right there. Sound of Silence, at least the Disturbed version. But I like the Simon and Garfunkel twist there.
Version. Maybe.
Yeah, that's the more familiar version, at least to me. But I like Simon and Garfunkel too.
They're definitely a throwback, but you know, the original creators.
I like it. Somebody said, "Hello, darkness, my old friend." All right. Back to the sports talk here. After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. Appreciate you guys listening, whether it's through the 96.5 The Fan FM signal or if it is through the Odyssey app. Yes, we have an app. You can download it on your iPhone or Android. If you're away from your radio dial and you want to listen in on any of our shows, whether it's here on After Hours, whether it is Fesco and Dusty in the mornings or Cody and Gold in the middays, or you want to sit in with Robin and C-Dot in the afternoons on the drive from 2 to 6, just download the Odyssey app. You can listen to all of our shows live. You can go back and listen to our podcast. You can even find our chapters page. So chapters means if you want to hear NFL draft discussion, you want to hear about the Chiefs, you want to hear about the Royals, college basketball, you go to chapters and it can curate your listening directly to the subject that you want to hear discussed on our airwaves. You can find all of that in the Odyssey app. Again, 913-586-7965. We're talking NFL draft. We're talking free agency. What the Chiefs are going to do this offseason. We got a lot of messages here. We were talking about Andrew Wiley, right? And how the Chiefs haven't had a tremendous track record of developing tackles. And somebody had mentioned Andrew Wiley, and I had mentioned that he had sat for like 3 or 4 years. That same person said he started out at guard first. Okay. So, I'm not saying that they can't develop a left tackle. I'm just saying that historically they haven't been great at it, and when they have done it, it's typically taken 3 to 4 years. And I don't think you can wait 3 to 4 years to have an every snap left tackle. You need one sooner rather than later. You can't afford to wait that long. And another 816 says, I don't know how Stanley can make that when it's his first full season in like 4 years. I don't either. But if Larrick Jackson is making $19 million a year now with $37 million guaranteed, Ronnie Stanley is a more talented left tackle. He is the top of the market for left tackle. He is going to make more than Larrick Jackson just got paid today by the Rams. I don't think it's plausible either. I think that it's a waste of money. Maybe not a waste of money, but it is certainly an overpay by every stretch of the imagination. But he might get that. He might get somewhere in the vein of $23 to $25 to $26 million a year. I think it's entirely plausible. You know, somebody was coming to the defense of small schools a little while ago. He said, someone says on 816, Tershawn Wharton turned into a pretty good player out of Missouri S&T, so don't knock the small programs. He's been a pleasant surprise. And I would never, ever knock a small school. I went to a small school. I'm a graduate of Northwest Missouri State. I'm a D2 guy at heart. I love my small schools. I only say, you know, talking about a prospect out of an FCS program or a D2 program, the likelihood of a miss with that prospect is higher than you would get if you drafted a guy out of the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC, or even the American Conference USA, the Mountain West, right? That's Division I FBS football. That's where the best of the best in college athletics go. Especially in today's day and age with the transfer portal, even great FCS guys don't stay in FCS. So, I don't know. It's just an interesting one. Oh, okay. Clarifying, the small school thing was just towards people in general who knock it, not you. Thank you. Appreciate that. And there are people out there who knock small schools. The talent gap between FBS to FCS or FBS to Division II, it's not as big as you think it is. It's really not. Player might be, you know, the difference between an FBS guy and an FCS guy might be 0.2 of a second on a 40-yard dash. It might be going with, you know, a guy that's got 28 reps on the bench press versus 24. It's a guy who's 6'5", 280 versus a guy who's 6'3", 270. That's the difference. It's really not as big as you think it is. And I saw it. I watched it firsthand going to school at Northwest Missouri State and watching their basketball program in particular the 4 years that I was there. They had two guys in particular, Trevor Hudgens and Ryan Hawkins, who won national championships at Northwest. They were outstanding players. Trevor Hudgens ended up playing in the G League for the Houston Rockets, got a little bit of time in the NBA, and is now a phenomenal player overseas playing in Europe. Ryan Hawkins went from an all-MIAA guy playing at Northwest to an all-Big East player at Creighton. The disparity between Division II and Division I, or FCS to FBS, is not as big as you think it is. Not at all. Yeah, and particularly looking for somebody high in the draft. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to stretch that far and go into the first round or even the second round and go after a left tackle, whether it's an FCS guy or not. Because at 31, it's going to likely be a project guy. Or you have to trade up. And they might. Brett Veach talked earlier this week. Mentioned trading up. Not saying that he was going to do it, but that they've done it before. Which I think is an indication that they have considered it. Or maybe are considering it. So that's not out of the equation. Somebody else in the text line in 816 sent in the small school thing. Yeah, okay. I read that one already. Excuse me. There we go. Chiefs will make an Orlando Brown Jr. type trade. If they don't believe in Humphreys, maybe. Is there a left tackle in a situation like that? I don't know. I mean, is there a left tackle that is on the, you know, going into their fourth year of their rookie deal and a long-term extension doesn't seem plausible? Or a guy that, you know, is not going to get the amount of money that he's worth from another team, a team that's looking to move on because they're in the midst of a rebuild or whatever it might be. I don't know if there's I don't know. Maybe there is a left tackle out there. I don't know of one off the top of my head. If you've got a suggestion, send it in. 913-586-7965. Jacob, you've awoken a sleeping giant here. People are sending in requests.
I will take a look at those.
Linda Ronstadt, Wiley's rehab is going great. Yeah. What are we doing with DJ Humphries? I have no idea, Raj. That came from Raj in the Ozarks. I have absolutely no idea what they're doing with DJ Humphries. My assumption is, if I was to put money on it as of right now, I think he comes back. I think he's your starter at left tackle next year. That's just my thoughts on the matter. So I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to watch what happens at left tackle. No question about it. If they want to bring back Charles Omenihu or others, it'll be DJ Humphries. Yeah. I mean, I think Omenihu is a good one to bring back. I think Turk Wharton is a good one to bring back. I think Nadi's probably gone. If you want to bring back Pinnell, I wouldn't have a problem with that. That's going to be a pretty team-friendly deal, as veteran as he is at this point in his career. Somebody else in the text line said, I might go defensive end in the first round and then running back in the second. I agree with you on like three quarters of that. I agree running back in the second. I would not have a problem with that. Or even early third, right? Because you got to pick at 66 there, early third round. I wouldn't have a problem there. I agree defensive line, but I think defensive tackle. I think the interior of this defensive line, it needs to get younger. It needs to get more stout. It needs to get more athletic, right? Pinnell is plenty stout, but he's not uber athletic. Turk Wharton is a little bit undersized, I would say, for a defensive tackle, an interior guy in the NFL nowadays. As an every down starter, I don't think it's plausible. Derek Nnadi is stout. He's good in run stuffing, but I'd like to see, and you're not going to find another Chris Jones by any means, but maybe a guy that fits that mold, a guy that's that type, somebody that Chris Jones could kind of benefit from. And then if you bring Omenihu back, you've got Omenihu along with George Karloftis at D end. You can continue to try to bring Felix Anudike Uzomah along, who just finished up year two, and I think was better. He was better this year than he was in year one. At least he played more. Provided some big snaps. He made some big plays. You saw flashes more, I think, this year than you saw last year. So who's to say he doesn't take another leap forward in year three and become the guy that Chiefs fans were hoping for when they took him a couple of seasons ago? 913-586-7965 is our number. 913 in the text line said Luther Burden at 31. Boy, if he falls there, why not? Right? I know you have better needs, and I wouldn't be disappointed one way or the other. If Burden's at 31 and the Chiefs want to take him, fine. If they don't want to take him, fine. Because I think you have greater positional needs on this football team. If you can hit on an interior defensive lineman, if you want to take a tackle at 31, I think that it's a reach, but go for it. I think you could take a corner, because I still am of the belief, as good as Trent McDuffie is as an outside corner, I think his position on the football field most naturally is as a slot corner. If you can go find another outside corner at 31, which I believe you can in this draft, and you can push McDuffie back inside to a slot corner spot, I think that makes your secondary so much better in the long haul. Because you can't do that right now. He's got to be an outside corner, because I don't think Joshua Williams is that guy, snap after snap after snap. I think you've got something going with Jalen Watson. You need another. You need an outside corner so you can push Trent McDuffie back to slot, where he is absolutely the best slot corner in football when he's there. You need a linebacker, lest we forget, because I don't think Nick Bolton's coming back, especially after the Trey Smith news from yesterday. I don't think Nick Bolton's back next year. Chiefs haven't paid a middle linebacker $10 million a year since before Andy Reid arrived. I don't think Nick Bolton's getting that. As much as Spags loves him, I highly doubt that Nick Bolton is in a Chiefs uniform next season. Somebody just said, isn't George a free agent also? No. Karloftis is still on his rookie deal. He just finished up year three. So he's got one more year. This season is his last on his rookie deal. Then they would have the option of the fifth-year player option if they so chose, or they could sign him to a long-term extension. But no, Karlaftis is not a free agent this offseason. Neither is Trent McDuffie. Somebody else, another person says, if burden falls, we have to take him. If it's a best player available mentality at 31, then yes. If he's there at 31, you take him. But it's just so hard for me when I look around at other positions of need. And I look at Luther Burden's player type, and it fits a lot of what Rashee Rice already does. I think if the Chiefs want to go after a wide receiver, make it, and I hate saying this because he's an Iowa State guy, why not Jaden Noel out of Iowa State? A big body receiver. It's like a 6'4", 6'5", jump ball, high point, red zone threat type of receiver. I would like to see that. Is Luther Burden an extremely talented wide receiver? Absolutely he is. Yes, no question. And would he fit in the Chiefs offense? They would find a way. I have no doubt about that. But with what Hollywood and Xavier Worthy already do, do you want your wide receiver three to be doing the same thing too? I'd like to see a third guy of a different type be playing that wide receiver three position. And if Burden is that wide receiver, then who's the slot? Because Xavier Worthy is a burner whose route running got so much better this year. And I think Rashee Rice is a quality, is a capable slot receiver. With his ability, his route running in the short and intermediate routes, ins and outs, slants, curls, zigs, dig routes, in his hands, his ability to catch in traffic, I'm just not sure. Another person in the text line says, the running back depth in the draft is too deep for us to take one in the second, especially since we have the 66th. I don't want them to even use it on the 66th for a running back. We could draft a running back with our second round, with our second pick in the third. I would love a corner first round. Yes and no. Because again, I look at... I'm having trouble with this one. It's going to depend on what the board does. If there's a huge run on running backs in round two, I think you may be forced to take one with that pick at 63 or the one at 66. I think you'd have to. It's tough. If, and big if, Luther Burden III fell to 31, that would be the definition of letting the board come to you. Yeah, I would agree. If the other 31 or 30 fan bases in the NFL let Luther Burden come to you at 31... it's tough. Jaden Higgins. I confused my Iowa State receivers. I don't pay much attention to Iowa State other than when they lose to Iowa. That's my only focus. Jaden Higgins. That's who I was referencing. That's my fault. They won't be able to pay Rice and Worthy in the future, so having Burden to learn a year under Hollywood would be ideal at that position. You're under the assumption that Hollywood Brown's going to be back next year. Is he? I don't know. You just gave Trey Smith $23 million a year. So I don't know if you can re-sign Hollywood Brown at this point. And, you know, Luther Burden, with Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy, that's only a two-year gap between Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy. So, I mean, yeah, you draft Luther Burden this year, and then maybe Rashee leaves in two seasons. I don't know what that gives you necessarily. I don't know. I want to see a big man as a receiver as a three. I would like to see it too. And then you can let Rashee play the slot, and you've got Xavier Worthy outside as your vertical threat as a speedster who's got improved route running. And then you've got a big bodied receiver to go one-on-one with corners who are going to be undersized, let's face it. Jump ball type guys. I think it would be fascinating to watch. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll continue the conversation when we come back. You're listening to After Hours with Logan Weber and Jacob Mustard right here on 96.5 The Fan. After Hours on The Fan. Here with you till 9 o'clock tonight. Logan Weber here with you. My producer for tonight's show, Jacob Mustard. Man, I had all this stuff written down on my show sheet. Did not expect this to turn into Chiefs offseason planning, propositions, draft previews, and whatnot, but here we are. 913-586-7965 is our number. Somebody in the text line just a little bit ago said, name a big receiver that has put up numbers under Reed in Kansas City. How many big receivers have they had under Andy Reed in Kansas City? He's been a speed guy. I mean, you know, the Legion of Zoom, even Sammy Watkins isn't a big receiver. 6'1", right? I mean, there haven't been any really big-bodied 6'3", 6'4", receivers under Andy Reid in Kansas City. And maybe there's a reason for that, right? We know Andy likes speed, and I just think it would be fascinating to see a bigger receiver to pair with Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice. So you've got three different looks at receiver. I think it would be fascinating to watch. Mahomes' best season was with prime Kareem. They need a dynamic running back. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And somebody earlier had said, you know, I don't want to use our second or even our first third on a running back. And I understand that inclination. And if, you know, there's a still a handful of running backs at 66, then okay. But it's going to get dictated, I believe, by what the board does. If you're looking at a situation where you've got 7 or 8 running backs taken off the board in the first two rounds of the draft, you may have to take a running back at 63 or 66 because I don't think you can afford to just not go get one. You have to get a running back. I think you have to. Not a maybe, not a probably, a need to. Have to 100%. You got to get a running back. Rice is going to be suspended. Won't know how he will be after that nasty injury. Burden makes sense. You do raise a good point there with Rashee probably going to miss the first 4, 6, 8 games of the season with a suspension looming on him. And then, yeah, there's something to be said for an injury, but he's a young guy. And, you know, with an ACL tear, that's been proven, you know, time and time again that guys can bounce back from that more often than they could, maybe even 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. Totally agree with your response about the run on running backs and how that can muddy up things. Running back is definitely the most interesting group this year now that the NFL is back to more smash mouth. It's going to be a fun draft with all the depth in the positions. Well, thank you for agreeing with me. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's going to have to come down to what the other teams do in this draft class. If you see a Caleb Johnson or a Dylan Sampson somehow get picked in the 50s, right? If you're like, oh man, you know, this is all of a sudden, or maybe you don't, right? Maybe you don't take a back at 63 or 66. Maybe you go with an interior defensive lineman or you go with a corner and then you're sitting there at 95 in the third. And in the 80s, you see three running backs get taken over the course of 4 or 5 picks. You may have to trade up to ensure that you can get one of those backs that you are taking a look at, right? If you see a Travion Henderson or an Ollie Gordon go off the board and you're like, oh God, we got to address this and address this now. Having to wait until 95 in the hopes that guys will come to you is a terrifying possibility. That same person who was asking me to name a big name receiver said exactly he doesn't use big receivers in his offense. At least he hasn't to this point. But the league is different, right? So maybe you're probably right, okay? I'm just, you know, wishful thinking on my part. I'd love to see a big body receiver. Is it going to happen? I don't know. Somebody mentioned Chris Conley was decent for us. He's a big body, but yeah, not many more examples. Dwayne Bowe at the back half of his career is the only bigger receiver that I can remember Andy having in KC. And that was the back half of, you know, his tenure. And he wasn't all that effective at that point in his career. So who knows? The more we talk about this, the more that I think, okay, maybe they don't get a big-bodied receiver. All right, if Luther Burden's at 31, take him, damn it. I've been broken down at this point. We're here. The same thing that happened last weekend. I was talking about Shannon Sharp was talking about recommending that the Chiefs make a run at trading for Kyle Pitts. And initially, I was like, no. Well, and by the end of it, I was completely bought in. By the end of it, I was like, oh, Kyle Pitts is going to have 100 catches for 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns next season. I went from, I'm not sure about Kyle Pitts at this point, to he's going to be tight end 3 off the board in fantasy football next year. Didn't expect that to happen in February, but here we are. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber here with you. Jacob Mustard is alongside. All right, I'm going to take the opportunity and finally move on to something else. And that something else will be addressed when we come back. 96.5 The Fan, it's your home for Kansas City sports. Big time NBA news dropping today. We got a few minutes here before we hit the top of the hour, so figured I'd take a little chance here to discuss it. 76ers center Joel Embiid out for the remainder of the season due to a knee issue. According to Shams Charania from ESPN, the 76ers said Friday that star Joel Embiid will miss the remainder of the regular season as he and the team continue to look for a long-term solution for a troublesome left knee that has plagued him all season. Apparently, following their loss to the Nets last Sunday, he dealt with increased swelling in that knee and underwent a new round of imaging on Monday to determine why his knee wasn't responding to treatment. The 76ers and Embiid consulted with dozens of doctors and specialists to determine that the best path forward was to sit him for the rest of the year. This is not new, right? Joel Embiid has notoriously been injury-riddled throughout his career. In fact, he's never played 70 games in a season since he was drafted in 2016-2017. Has never played 70 games in a year. He played in 68 games in 2021-22. He played in 66 games the following year, the 22-23 season. That was the year he won MVP. But played in 31 games as a rookie, played in 51 games in back-to-back years in 2019-20 and then 2021, played in 39 games last year, and has only played in 19 games this season. When he's on the floor, remarkable talent. I mean, for his career, he's averaging 27 and 11. 27.7 and 11 rebounds a night for his career. Unfortunately, he has not been able to stay healthy.
I was going to say part of ability is availability, and he does not have much, to say the least. I mean, it's disappointing. It really is, because when he's healthy, he's one of the best players in the entire NBA. But that seems to be even more rare today than it was. I mean, we knew he had health concerns coming into the NBA, but it just has plagued him his entire career.
So with him sitting out for the remainder of this season, that will complete his ninth year in the NBA. He will have played and started in 452 games in the first 9 years of his NBA career out of a possible 738, meaning that he has played in approximately 61% of the possible games he could have played in since he joined the Philadelphia 76ers. You've played in 61% of the games that your team has played since you joined that organization. And yeah, when he's on the floor, he's great. When he's on the floor, he's an MVP candidate. But he can't stay on the floor. He's played in 58 games in the past two seasons. 58 games out of 164. He's played in a third. He's played in a third of their games.
It's disappointing.
Half a season.
It really is.
He's played in just over half a season in 2 years. Not good. It's not Ben Simmons level bad. It's not Kawhi Leonard in San Antonio level bad, but my goodness. And I mean, what is Joel Embiid making right now?
Supermax, I can tell you that.
Yeah, he signed a 3-year, $192.9 million deal. Meaning that he is through, this was an extension he just got. So he is under contract through the 2028-29 season. That is a player option.
Which at this rate, he's not turning down that player option.
That's so much money. He's averaging $64 million a year. $64 million a year. So that's $128 million, and he's played in 58 games in the last 2 years. So $128 million divided by 58. In the last 2 years, he has made roughly $2.2 million per game he's actually played in.
I mean, if you break it down further, he's making about $175,000 a day to sit on the bench in street clothes.
Wow. And I mean, I get it to a certain extent because he's too talented a player to just let walk and end up somewhere else. But also hard to justify continuing to pay a guy like that to be hurt so consistently.
At what point do you trade Embiid and help rebuild around Tyrese Maxey? Because he's shown out as a star, not to mention their other, oh, his name's slipping my mind, their rookie they drafted this year.
Oh, yeah. Jalen, oh, my goodness. Super popular TikTok guy.
McCain or something like that.
Jared McCain, yeah.
Yeah, and you know,
went down with an injury in his own right.
Yeah, and you got two good pieces there. I mean, Tyrese Maxey has become a superstar, at least in Philadelphia, and is taking over what Embiid was doing, at least at a points per game perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you're...
When do you go to him?
You're 20 and 38 right now. The playoffs are out of the question. You signed that big deal with Paul George, and it has not worked.
Not at all.
At all. I mean, he's averaging 16 a game, which is fine, but he's only played in 39 games, and you're paying a lot of money to a guy only averaging 16 a game, who is 34 years old. I'm not sure how much longer you can trust the process, Philly.
I mean, Paul George also put up his stat line. I think what everybody has seen the contract to be, you know, he played 32 minutes, put up 9 points, then 30 minutes, 14, then down to 12, 14, a 2-point game, 17, yeah. 15, 19, 25. So he's trending back in the right direction, but man,
that's
2 points on 1 of 7 shooting or 9 points of 3 on 3 of 11. It's rough.
Yeah, and if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you look right now. Don't even look at your wins or losses. Don't even look at where you sit in the conference standings right now. Look at your own division. Right now in the Eastern Conference, you've got the Cleveland Cavaliers as the top seed. The reigning NBA champions, the Boston Celtics, are the second seed. The New York Knicks are the 3. So not only are you sitting in fourth in your own division, but the 3 teams, 2 of the 3 teams ahead of you are in the top 3 of the division. You're not catching the Celtics or the Knicks right now. Even with a healthy Joel Embiid, I don't think you're catching them. I don't know, man. I'm surprised by where they're sitting right now. You're staring down the barrel of a top 10 pick in the NBA draft. Address something. Somebody just said, I'd rather talk Chiefs left tackle issues than the NBA. I know, but we spent an hour and 45 minutes talking about the Chiefs left tackle issues and their running back issues and their wide receiver issues and their cornerback issues and what they're going to do in the draft. Just wanted a little bit of time to talk about the NBA. All right. Can I get that? And now we've done it. 913-586-7965 is our number. We've got a lot more coming up here in the final hour of our program tonight, including some college basketball discussion and the latest bracketology from Joe Lunardi dropped this afternoon. I want to get into the nitty-gritty of that when we come back. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. You're listening to After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. It's your home for Kansas City sports.